Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the 147 podcast with me, sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the former Triple Crown winner and snooker world champion, the magician, Sean Murphy.
And he's not just that, is he? He's the reigning players champion, and as of the other week in Hull, the reigning tour champion. Congratulations, Sean.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sound so surprised when I said it. No, great victory. Really, really good. It was good to see.
Yeah, thanks. It was nice to carry on the form of recent weeks. And, you know, I've been saying in the press, in the media, all season really, that I really did feel something good was coming. And so it was nice to sort of just carry that on. And, you know, it's you know, sometimes you get a bit worried that these little, you know, right points of improvement and stuff, they're just going to be temporary, you know, and you see a good performance coming through the season. You see it coming in Wolverhampton, obviously you win the players' chat and all the rest of it. And the test, I suppose, is to keep these things going. The challenge is to keep it up. And, you know, I'm pleased to go to Hull and, you know, take the trophy home. Well, and absolutely delighted.
Congratulations on the win. I mean, it was a stunning win. Congratulations on that. Even bigger congratulations on avoiding using the word trending just then when you were talking, which is always a good thing because everyone's sick of hearing that, Sean. It was quite funny. I came across the hall. We had a coffee. And it was the day that Kyron was playing Ding.
Yeah.
In the semi. And then you were playing Selby the next day in the semi. And we were out for a coffee. We bumped into Kyron and his brother Taylor. And we had a little chat and everything else. Obviously, you and Kyron hate each other. No, you don't at all. We came away from that chat and you said to me, you said, how do you think he's going to do against Ding? And I said, oh, I think he beats Ding today and it should be a cracking final between him and Selby on Sunday.
Yeah.
And you paused for a second, looked at me. I won't say what you called me.
It's a family show.
It's a family show, so let's not. But yeah, no, it was a great win. Good week for Kyron as well, actually.
Yeah, very good.
You know,
yeah.
He's had a very up and down kind of season. And I think he sort of needed that. He needed that bit of form coming into the world.
I've said it for a long time. You know, I know him quite well. And we come from the same neck of the woods. Well, certainly grew up there anyway. And, you know, he really looks to me like he builds his entire season around the World Championships and the peaking at the right times and stuff like that. And as I said in the post-match interview, he does everything right. Success is just around the corner for Kyron. And of course, that comment in itself is flawed, isn't it? Because success is relative. You know, Kyron has already had a very successful career. Many players would, you know, give their left arm to have had the career he's already had. I firmly believe that he is going to win you know, majors, triple crown events, whatever phrase we want to use for them, because he just does everything right. And they say you keep doing the right things for long enough, you will get the rewards at the other end.
Yeah,
I think it will come.
It would be no shock if in a couple of weeks' time he's lifting the world crown.
Yeah, no shock
anybody. It would be no shock at all. It's funny, just on that kind of subject, I remember Jack Lizowski was interviewed, and he was interviewed about, you know, his season and how it's going, blah, blah. And he said, look, yeah, I haven't won a ranking event yet. But look at what I have done. You know, and you look at what Jack's done, and 95% of players would happily give their right arm for what he's achieved in the game. Kyron, probably 98% of players would give the right arm for what he's achieved in the game. So it's like, as you say, you've got to temper it sometimes and just think, well, actually, look at what they have achieved, look at what they have done, and look at what else could come yet.
I think that's a really good thing for life.
Yeah.
I think working to what your definition of success is, not everyone else's. Because success means different things to different people, doesn't it? You know, in our world, you know, you look at somebody like a Stephen Hendry, who's one of the greatest players of all time. I'm assuming to someone like Stephen, success was winning. Anything but a win, he would probably have classed as failure. And yeah. I'm putting words in his mouth.
I don't think you are. I think he has actually said that at some point.
But that's his viewpoint. A different person in a different walk of life, success for that is something completely different. I think it's always important to remain true to yourself and not get caught up in other people's measuring stick for you, you know, not get involved in what they think is success. All that matters is that you think you've had a successful career, you know, life, whatever it might be, and keep true to yourself. From my point of view, if we're going back to Kyron, when I look at him, I see a player, as I said the other night, he does everything right on and off the table. Players would give their left arm to have the career he's already had. And I think, you know, if we're looking at the majors, I think success in those events, if we deem success as a W, I think that is bound to come sooner than rather than later.
Bloody hell. He's won a couple of ranking titles and all of a sudden he's giving out life advice. What's happened to Sean Murphy? What's going on?
Join us next time for more life coaching with Murphy and Seymour.
No one needs that kind of life coaching, do they?
Absolutely not. I'm not fit to coach anyone at anything.
One very, very quick way to the drunk tank or the gutter. His life coaching was it. Just talking about this, though. Now, I'm not saying the podcast is the 100% sole reason for it, but I looked at your earnings for the year before we started the podcast, and then I've looked at them for the, 10 months, 8 months, 9 months since we started the podcast, Sean. And I'm wondering how much you owe me out of all that.
Yeah. It's a conversation we should have off air, isn't it, really?
It's some turnaround. I mean, we've talked away from the podcast about this, and, you know, it was, I think, your final appearance at the Crucible is about to drop off the money list, the ranking list. And that must have been a concern earlier on in this season, start of this season. You must have looked at it and thought, I need to earn some points this season.
Yeah, it was definitely on the radar. It was something Robbie and I were talking about. And I think even as the year turned, you know, as we started 2023, let alone the season, but as Christmas came and went, and New Year came and went, I think my end of year ranking was projected to be like down in the 30s somewhere. I think I was 38, 39 at the end of season. So to be sat here pre-World Championship, I think at fifth, do you know, I'm taking that.
Oh,
I'm giving myself a pat on the back, which, you know, is difficult to give, you know, in sport. It's difficult to give yourself praise. But if I'm allowed to for a minute, it is our podcast.
Yeah, of course.
If I'm allowed to, I think I've done bloody well to turn it round, because, you know, things were going in one direction for me. They were going badly, you know, and I have turned it round with the help of a lot of people, with the help of a lot of different things. You know, things have turned around, and, you know, we're going to talk about the World Championship, of course, but, you know, as I go into this tour, I was thinking it as we came to Sheffield today, having done the draw this morning in Manchester. I was thinking about this as it came over the tops, as we call them. It's been a real turnaround, like, you know, and I to come into the World Championships in this position and all, like, not be under any pressure, really, like, just to be able to have a free crack at it. Is a wonderful position to be in.
I was going to say, you are in that position as well, which is great. Can you there's been a lot of things. This last year, there's been a lot of things. I joke about the podcast. I say that in jest. You know, this is a bit of fun for us. But there's been a lot of changes in your life in the last 12 months or so. Can you sort of pinpoint one or two things that you think have made the bigger difference?
Well, the gastric sleeve surgery that I had, you know, about 10 months ago has changed my life. You know, not just from the physical point of carrying less weight and the obvious knock-on benefits that that has, but the mental benefits that that has brought on. You know, just feeling that little bit better about yourself. We're under a lot of scrutiny, you know, on TV, online, social media, all the rest of it. You know, your suit only has to just fit that little bit tighter for people to notice. And of course, as we know, you know, people aren't always that generous with their compliments these days. People can be, you know, very negative when they want to be, especially if they've had a bet. You know, it was just constant abuse, you know, and my mental health had really plummeted. That in turn had a knock-on effect on me as a bloke.
Yep.
You know, I was a nightmare to be around. I was bad company. I was, you know, in terrible form. And that in turn had a knock-on effect on my game. And so there's no question that the sleeve surgery has changed my life on and off the table. And the improvement that that has made to my own mental health, as well as my physical health, has improved me as a bloke. And that in turn has made me a better snooker player. In terms of snooker itself, you know, I've made a number of changes to a bit of strategy. I'm trying to play with a bit more of a smile on my face, trying to not take it less seriously, but not take it as serious. I know that's a bit of a backward way of saying it, but do you kind of get what I mean?
I know what you mean, though. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I think I know what I mean as well. Just, you know, I'm obviously giving everything when I'm out there, but just trying to enjoy it. And I was thinking about this, like, you know, I say we all, there's a few players, maybe half a dozen of us that do the road shows, that do the exhibitions, that do that circuit. And of course, when you're doing these shows, you always, every night, you're putting on a show and you're having a bit of a laugh and a joke with people, you're telling stories and all the rest of it. Now, whilst I'm not out in an arena at the Players' Championship telling stories, you are still putting on a show. And I think it's okay to do that with a smile on your face rather than a frown. And since Christmas, that's what I've tried to do. And I've tried to not treat them as exhibitions, but just bring a little bit of, you know, bring a little bit of that happiness and that sort of carefree attitude to tournament play. Just a little bit.
Just enjoy it a bit more.
Just
really.
Enjoying it a bit more. Because, you know, I've been bang under it for a few seasons and it hasn't worked. And I always give him compliments. It makes me sick. But, you know, having Robbie around, you know, has really helped me because we just have a great time. We just have a laugh and you get really pent up and you get bang under it. And he's just able just to hit the release valve and he just brings everything back down. We have a bit of a laugh. We have a bit of a giggle and he helps me get me in a good mood, which helps me perform better. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to win, but it has the last few comps.
Absolutely, but mainly the podcast, yeah?
But mainly the podcast,
mainly the podcast, fantastic. Now, as Sean alluded to there, we are in Sheffield. We are in what is the centre of the known universe, at least for about the next 3 weeks or so. We're in a hotel room overlooking the Winter Gardens. And as Sean pointed out, if I look to one side, I can actually see the front of the Crucible. Now, I'm not going to be there this year, but you will, Sean. The draw was made this morning. You made the draw, or you were there when the draw was made on Five Live. Yep. We're going to talk about that in detail in a minute. Before we do, let's just talk about Hull a little bit. Tour Championship, obviously you won it. Great event. Ding went deep, which is good for snooker, I think. It's great to see. Venue in Hull, bonus arena.
Fantastic. Couldn't fault it. Thought it was fabulous. And I think that would run true for most players that have, you know, done it, is that when you're playing in these purpose-built venues that are built for performances, I think they do have a different atmosphere. Just the setup backstage is different. You know, there's dressing rooms, there's areas to go. They're built for performances.
Yep.
Whereas when you try and shoehorn a tournament into a leisure centre or, you know, a temporary structure or whatever it might be, it works, but it's not quite as good. So for me, I thought the bonus arena was fabulous. State of the art. Everything was in the right place. Thought it was great.
Yeah, it's great. Right in the centre of the city as well. I've done boxing there before. Really good venue. The one thing that people griped and moaned about was the crowds. And they were disappointing early doors. I've got to say, up to the semi-finals, I think, they were pretty low, which I think is down to a few things. Yes, there was a lot of big-name players missing. There was. You always joke, no one comes out to see Mark Allen. There was a lot of big-name players missing, which is going to have an effect. A lot of people criticising the marketing of it. There was a lot of marketing on social media. Every time I opened Facebook or Instagram, I was seeing an advert for it. Maybe there should have been more advertising locally in the Hull area. I don't know. Some people in Hull saying they didn't even know it was on. You know, unless they were actually going there, they didn't even know it was on. I did see a few things that tickled me, though. On social media, that there was a few people. First of all, the week before we had the WST Classic in Leicester, there was no crowds allowed in until the final day. And people moaned and whinged at, why aren't they letting crowds in? There's no crowds being let in. Why aren't they letting crowds in? Where were those people? Where were those people in Hull? Because those people that really wanted to go to Leicester that couldn't get in, you can't tell me they were the three men and a dog that were there for the first round match in Hull. You know, where were those people? Why don't those people go to Hull and watch the Tour Championship in Hull? Is Hull that far away? It's not. It's quite accessible by train from most places or by however, really. So there's that. And the other one I saw was, I think I saw three different people say, well, if the people of Hull aren't going to support it, bring it to Glasgow. We used to have a ranking event and we don't anymore. Well, there's reasons why it's not in Glasgow anymore. The arena wouldn't allow a betting sponsor to sponsor an event there. They let us down last minute. We had to go to Clandidno for the Scottish Open that year, which was weird. But even then, the crowds in Scotland at Glasgow were never that great, were they?
No, I think, you know, not when you compare them to, you know, full venues or full arenas or some of the majors, Triple Crowns, whatever. In fact, yeah, I had this conversation with someone in Manchester this morning about this very topic, and they were saying, oh, you know, we should definitely bring an event to Manchester, and I made the point that, you know, we had the English Open at Manchester, the Trafford Centre, White City Trafford Centre.
Yep.
You know, great location, wasn't well attended at all. So, you know, I'm not a marketeer, you know, I'm not an expert at selling tickets. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest. As you said, the event was very well supported digitally. The crowds were excellent from the weekends. The crowds who attended all week, the people who did come, were brilliant, supported us as players, you know, very, very well. And, of course, that gives you the 12th man syndrome. It helps you put on a bit better of a show when the crowd give you something back. Like, you know, it's a two-way agreement. But it is hard walking out and playing in front of an empty arena or a half empty arena. As you said earlier, you know, we met for a coffee and we went for a bit of a stroll around Hull. The only piece of marketing I saw in Hull was on a digi advertising board in the shopping centre that came up. You know, every 5 minutes there was a thing that said, you know, the snooker was there. Apart from that, I didn't see any advertising at all. And I'm sure, you know, when we get down to brass tacks, I'm sure that must have played a massive role. I know from listening to, you know, the Snooker Scene podcast, they've had a lot of correspondence to that effect from people in Hull who back that up to say, you know, we were unaware the event was there, or if you didn't know the tournament was there because you're not a massive follower of the game, you wouldn't have known we were in town.
Yeah, yeah.
So that has to have an impact. I think the other problem as well is, I think this is just moving the subject on slightly, is that a lot of these tournaments move.
Yep.
And they don't take root. And you know, we're sat here in Sheffield. The World Championships has been here for some 40-odd years, coming up for 45 years or something, maybe even more. And you don't get this, you know, partnership and feeling with a city and the people in that city when the tournament's constantly moving.
Yep.
Just doesn't work.
Well, the Waterfront Hall Belfast, cracking example of that. The Northern Ireland, that's its home. That is its home. Okay, I actually think, is it not Media City, is it in the Trafford area of Manchester where they had the English Open? I actually think that would be a great venue.
Well, it's actually gone. It's not there anymore.
But there's other areas there. Sure. There's Event City. There's different things there that they could host it in. That could be a great venue because it is Manchester. But it maybe needs time to bed in and grow. And, you know, I hope Hull gets an event because, like you said, it's a great arena. I hope it's given chance. I live, most people may know that listen to this podcast, I live in York, the greatest
never mentioned
city
it.
On earth. No, I hide that one under a bushel. It's 40 minutes, 45 minutes from Hull by car. York, we know, is a snooker city. The UK Championship's been there for a number of years. It's very popular. Could have been advertised in York. People from York would have gone to Hull. It's no kind of trip. I came over for a coffee with you. You know what I mean? It's not that far.
You'll go
it's,
anywhere for a free drink, though, won't
yeah,
you?
That's very true, actually. I will. It's not that far at all. So it's quite an easy one to get to and from. So even advertising in York would have made sense. But there you go. Were you there? What did you think? At 147pod across all social media. The venue was great. Sean's going to say it was a great tournament. I'm quite sure because he
won
it. One
of the best tournaments I've ever been to.
Yeah, I can imagine. It was a great tournament to watch. It was a fantastic tournament to watch. It was a pity there wasn't more people there because I think it would have been great. The Tour Championship, as a rule, always been really well supported.
Yeah, I think it's just a shame for the event, for that series, that, you know, it culminates with the Tour Champs. You know, you've played in it all season. You get in the World Grand Prix, the 32. Then you play in another couple of events to reduce to the players for the 16. Then you play and you reduce to the 8 for the Tour. It kind of feels like that event, not the players, but the event deserves packed crowds every session. It feels like it has that gravitas about it that it deserves, it warrants that attention.
I used to be the MC for it, and it was in Llandudno at the time. And I think I did 2 or 3 in Llandudno, and then there was the abandoned one. And it was great. I mean, I used to say to everyone, it's one of, probably my favourite event of the year that I did, on account of the fact that every match, every day, was long-form snooker, and every match, every day, was worthy of being a ranking event final. And it was the number of frames you get in a ranking event final. And it was brilliant. But more than that, the crowds in Llandudno for it were always strong. Always strong. Every round they were strong. And I used to love that. The atmosphere over there used to be absolutely electric for every game. From the first game on the first day of the week, right the way through to the final, it was brilliant. One table set up all the way, fantastic. As I say, I hope Hull gets a ranking event. I hope we do go back there on the tour. Who knows?
The other thing I did see, would never look at it because I never buy snooker tickets. So I saw a few things on social saying that, you know, that people thought the tickets were a little pricey for Hull. I don't know if is that correct? I don't know if they were or not. I suppose one of the things I did say during the event when I was doing an interview at some stage, you know, we are in a cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
There is no getting around that. And for a lot of people, you know, whatever it costs for a ticket for the day or for a session, you know, for a lot of people, it's just a stretch too far. And if you're going to choose between coming to an early match, you know, like I say, I mean, you know, no one watches Mark play. But if you're going to pay your money to go and watch Mark Allen, you know, make 20 and keep rolling up behind the green, or you can come to watch the semi-final or the final, I know which one I'm choosing.
I get that. I do get that. The difficult thing is, if you're a World Snooker Tour, do you put them on sale at that price and hope they sell, but then when they don't, you reduce them, put them on Groupon or one of these other discount selling sites. The problem you then get is people that paid full whack aren't happy, okay? The other thing is, and someone wrote into, I think it was Dave Hendon's Snooker Scene podcast, saying, oh, the NHS, you give it to the NHS workers. And there is this, my partner works in the NHS, I know this happens, where there's surplus tickets for things. They have a website and they go on there and you can get free tickets for different events and different things. You could do that. Again, you've got the only slight problem that someone gets a free ticket, they're chatting to someone in the lobby. It's like, oh, I got this, brilliant, fantastic, got it free through the NHS. When they've paid 40 quid or however much it is, that person could go, oh, wait up, why have I paid 40 quid? Now, I got a free ticket for an event last year. I won't say what it is, I won't say where the free ticket was from, but it was like a ballot thing, you enter it, and I got a free ticket. Now, I happen to know that this particular event, they give away thousands of these. So I will now never buy a ticket. I'm just going to enter this ballot every year, get a free ticket, because everyone I know that's entered this ballot got a free ticket. But that's now stopping me actually buying one, because I would buy one.
Listeners, I am going to find out what this ticket was for, by the way. I am going to ask him when we stop recording.
Yeah, you can do. But it's one of those, if something is priced at nothing, its value is nothing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I'm not against free tickets.
Yeah,
but things have to have a value. Otherwise, as we've seen with the World Championship, you see a lot of talk on social media about the pricing for the World Championship tickets now, which, as I say, I haven't bought a snooker ticket for a long, long time. I wouldn't know what they are or what they were. I believe they've gone up in price.
Yep.
And I believe people have, you know, it's put people's nose out of joint over it. But the problem is the Crucible's full.
Yep.
And it is market forces. And if people, if WST put the price up there and people are willing to pay it, that's its value, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe the problem is that, you know, for years and years and years, the price of a snooker ticket was undersold. So now when it's come to what its actual market value is, that steep increase is felt to be, it's felt to be more steep than it is because it's happened very quick. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
No, I do actually, because in one of the other spots I work in is rugby league. And in rugby league, there's a Bradford Bulls, a rugby league club, dominated Super League for years. Bradford Bulls, massive name in the sport. They have odds on their stadium. For years, they gave away a lot of free tickets, an awful lot of free tickets, to the point that a lot of people went to an awful lot of games without ever paying for a ticket. They've got a new chairman, I think it was, a new owner, and they stopped the free tickets. And people stopped coming because they'd always had tickets for free. So why are they now going to pay for them? And their crowds dwindled. And the upshot of all this was they tumbled down the league. You know, they lost their Super League status, got relegated from Super League, down they went to the Championship. And it was actually really sad to see because they were one of the great names of the sport. And a lot of that was down to the free tickets. Because for years, people had free ticket after free ticket after free ticket. When it actually came to pay for them, well, no, because they're free. And that's the value people place on things. For me, I think it's really difficult, actually. I think it's incredibly difficult. And I wouldn't want the job of doing that for all the tea in China, to be honest. Couple of options. I think the NHS one is actually a good one. I think if you've got spare capacity, you've got space in the crowd, the NHS one's a good one. The other one that personally I would back massively is schools. If you want to fill it up, go to two or three local schools, give them some tickets, get the kids in there with the teachers or with the parents or whatever. Get those kids, get that next generation in there. We used to have, I don't know if they still have the school trips to some of the events. We used to have them in, I'd give them a tour around, they'd go to Q Zone, they'd learn how to play shots on the table, then they'd come in and watch a session or half a session or whatever. You could do that, and that then is boosting the game in that area. Which for me, I mean, that for me, that's the option. For me, that's the thing you do. You pack it with school kids, which, okay, you and Robbie with your crisp bag and mobile phone advert, that could be more challenging, I think, with kids in there. But get them there. Get that younger audience in there. Get them watching snooker. Get them enjoying it. Get them in the Q Zone playing. You know, it's the next generation.
Yeah, how could you possibly argue with that?
Well, you can't.
Checkmate.
Absolutely. Right. Let's move on then. We shall move on from Hull. But well done once again.
Thank you.
Proud of you. Just. Venue announcements. Talking of venues, there are some changes. The World Grand Prix will be in Leicester at the Morningside Arena. The Players' Championship, a return to Telford after all these years. The Telford International Centre. Only been to Telford once. And while I was there, someone got stabbed right outside my hotel. So not a great advert for Telford, but I'm sure it's lovely, really. The British Open is going to Cheltenham, and a real curveball, if the rumours are true, the shootout is going to Swansea. South Wales gets a ranking event, and it's the shootout, which is a lively one. It's going to be great down there, I think.
Yeah, well, they'll love it down there, won't they? The South Walians, is that a word?
Yeah, absolutely.
They really love their sport down there, and I'm sure that event will be really well supported. Listen, it has a foot in the camp of that thing I don't like, which is events moving around and not getting their identity and not pairing with a particular venue and creating that history and storytelling amongst the local communities. People build that bond with an event. When I was growing up watching, so you knew the you know, there was going to be an event at the Hexagon in Reading.
Yep.
You knew that the UK champs was there, and you knew the world champs was here, and the Masters was at the conference. You knew that. And you built up that rapport and that affection with wherever it was. You can't do that whilst these events keep moving. However, having had such a close relationship with Brandon Parker before he passed away, and obviously understanding his role within World Snooker, and the massive amount of moving parts there is in putting these tournaments on, how far in advance you have to find a, you know, it's not every venue that can host a snooker event. because we arrive, it's like a mad circus. You know, the guys have been here at the Crucible in Sheffield fitting for this tournament for days. It doesn't start till Saturday. That's when the public are going to see it. We're going to see the... We've been here days setting it up. And they'll be here for days after it, taking it down. It doesn't go up overnight. It can't go in every... Trying to shoehorn these tournaments into these venues, doesn't he? It's not easy. And so you're not choosing from a massive list of venues that can accommodate us. Then it's about availability. And so you're back down to this. So I'm sure the guys at Wilson, they know all this. And it's a job I don't want. You know, I wouldn't want to do this. But we're back to venues that we know. I don't know where we're going to be in Telford. I think the last time we were in Telford, I think I won it. I think the UK Jammy Gyps in 2008.
It's the International Centre. I think it's the same place.
So, I've fond memories of it.
Yeah.
Won the UK's there, qualified for the Worlds there twice. Like, you know, it's a venue I know well. But, you know, listen, as I say, it's not something that I would want to solve. I'd love to see these events find a place and stay. I'd love World Snooker Tour to start doing long-term relationships with venues, booking them in advance, 2-3 year deals, maybe even more. I'm sure they would too.
Yeah, I'm sure
there are good reasons why that doesn't happen. We just don't know what they are.
Well, on the flip side of the coin, there's some of the changes. I believe the home nations all stay in place. So Welsh Open venue, Crumlin in Llandudno again. The Northern Ireland Open, obviously the Waterfront Hall in Belfast. We're back up in Edinburgh again at the same venue for the Scottish Open and the Brentwood Centre again for the English Open, where we had the snow, of course, this season. So home nations stay in place. Others are moving around. I believe there's more tournaments to be announced as well, which is fantastic. And there's more and more coming. But let's get away from that then. We are half an hour into the podcast. We're going to take a very, very short break. After that, we are going to focus on where we are right here in Sheffield as we build up towards the World Championships at the Crucible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod.
So yes, we are here in Sheffield, just over the way from the Crucible, just over the way from the Winter Gardens, and the place is buzzing, Sean, isn't it?
Absolutely buzzing. Went down to the venue earlier to hit some balls, went in the practice room. That's even different. You know, you could never get in until the Friday, the day before.
Wow.
But they let us in now. We were escorted in, Robbie and I. Everyone's wearing a hard hat. Everyone looks like Bob the Builder down there. We were escorted in into the practice room. You weren't allowed anywhere else. But yeah, great. And then as we walk back up from stage door, up the street, back to the hotel, I just got overrun with a memory of being a child, of being a 9-year-old boy running up that same street after Steve Davis, who was on his break from the match we were watching, running, going back to his house. And I don't know what came over me, but I just remember vividly, I've talked about it before, but the memory came back to me there, running after him up the street. And you just think, wow, like now I'm 40 years of age now. You know, you've been playing this game for a long time and now, you know, you're here playing. It's magical, this place. And it does things to snooker players that, frankly, you know, other venues and other cities just don't.
Yeah, I've got to say, as I've said before on the podcast, I've been lucky enough to fill in for Rob occasionally at the Crucible when he's had to go off to London to do the marathon with BBC. I don't have to this year. He's not doing it. So sadly, I miss out on that. But that venue over there, goodness me, I remember the first, because I've been here as a fan, I've been here to watch the theatre when I was a kid and different things. But I've been in there and watched snooker as a fan, and you take it on, it's incredible. But the first time I filled in for Rob, and I came down those stairs into the theatre, and the hairs on the back of my neck just went, they literally pinged. And it's unique, isn't it? As a venue, it's completely unique. There's nowhere like it.
Well, I said earlier on that I think there's something special about venues that have been purposely designed for performing in. There is, they are better. Just acoustically, and just the things are in the right place and all the rest of it. But there's something in that build. There's something in it that's weird. You know, we talk about the snooker gods obviously just having a laugh. But there is something in that room. And I always make sure to remind myself to just take a minute and remember all the magical moments that have happened in that theatre,
yep,
in our wonderful sport. How lucky are we that all those years ago, Mike Watterson, who was the original promoter of this tournament,
yeah, yeah,
his wife, came here to see a show, knew he was struggling to find a venue, and went home and said to him, Mike, I've found you a home for the World Championships. It's in the Crucible Theatre. How lucky are we that happened? Otherwise, we could be anywhere.
Do you know what I put it down? I think it's the steepness of it. It's almost like an amphitheatre when you get in there. It's people are almost, you look up and they're almost on top of the table looking down. That's kind of what it's like. I did a boxing show in Denmark a couple of months ago, and it was a handball arena, and the sides of the venue were so steep. They were like literally straight up. And that was a similar kind of thing. You sort of looked up and saw people. And I don't know, for me, it's that closeness of the crowd makes it really special.
Well, that's why it's called the Crucible. That's what Crucible means.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's Crucible talks about thing, you know, steepness, and it talks about like all like a melting pot.
Yeah.
And how, you know, that's what it means. So when you're out there, it's just phenomenal. And I mean, as I say, you know, the first time I came as a 9-year-old in 1992 to watch Ebden make his debut against Davis was just magical. Not least because it was on one of the biggest days in snooker folklore ever listed, Phil, was the day that Mark Johnston Allen.
I know where you're going.
On the other table, wore the famous black and white checkered suit, which any of you listening to this now, stop what you're doing, hit Google and type in Mark Johnston Allen, World Snooker Championship, and the first image you see will be in of this black and white. So now you think I've worn some dodgy suits. This guy invented it.
Oh, you
talk
incredible.
About the John Virgo no dad waistcoats from Big Break fame. This was a no dad suit. No dad, don't make me wear that suit. What was he thinking?
Phenomenal suit. Absolutely.
What flair.
It looked only, I think, the singer Justin Hawkins from The Darkness, only he could pull that off.
I remember back in the day, in my first go at wearing something with twinkles on, I had the suit maker for Strictly Come Dancing make me a suit in 2007 or 8, which I wore here. And no one had seen it until they got the knock on the dressing room door and Steve Davis was out there doing a piece to camera as we took the walk down the dressing, as we took the walk to the arena. And he said to me off air, and he swore, he said, I won't swear, he said, you better play well today wearing that suit, otherwise I'm going to slaughter you in the studio. Now I did, but you have, if you're going to wear something like that, Mark, you need to play really, really well.
My son's a kicker for his rugby team, and this season he got white boots. And I was like, I says to him, Elliot, if you're going to wear white boots, your kicking needs to be absolutely on point this season, because if it's not, you're going to look daft. And fair play to him, he's matched it. Right, the Crucible, the World Championships. Before we go into the draw, which was made this morning, let's just look very briefly at Judgment Day, or Judgment Days, because there's two of them. First of all, I'd like to say, I put this on social media, the coverage on Discovery Plus was absolutely phenomenal. Phil Yates, Dave Hendon, Ken, Rob Walker, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. They went from table to table. You saw all the action. You could watch each table on its own, or you could watch the main show, which was table to table with interviews. Absolutely brilliant. They must have needed a serious lie down or a couple of pints after that, because What a couple of days that was.
Well, I can tell you they didn't, because I saw them this morning straight after it when they got to Manchester for the draw. They had two almond croissants and a cappuccino. That's what they had this morning after Judgment Day. Can you just think for a second, though? We've been doing that Judgment Day thing for 6, 7, maybe 8 years, something like that. The quality of it, the production on it's phenomenally good.
I'm amazed. I don't know what the contractual side of it is. I'm amazed the BBC have never picked that up.
Yeah, I think it's probably... I love the whole, you know, with the multi-table. Right now, guys, with something happening on table three, let's go. I love that. I wish they bring that... Like, the Home Nations is screaming out for that kind of thing.
Do you not think, though, that on a main TV channel, that would go down really well because it's quite fast-paced? There's always something happening. It's kind of like when you watch the golf and it goes hole to hole and, you know, some of it's a minute or two behind. You know, it's done for dramatic purposes, but... But you see it all. And I just think it's great telly. I think it's really great telly. I honestly think if the head of sport at Channel 4 or wherever tuned in and watched that, they might look at it and go, yeah, we want this.
Well, the biggest compliment I can give it is that we weren't away on holiday. I was sat there. I followed it all on my phone. The minute we got back in the house, I put it on the big screen, went on YouTube, put it on the World Snooker Channel. It didn't get turned off all day. It was on all day.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Right, let's look at a couple of the fixtures from Judgment Day then. First of all, a bit of a sad one really. Ryan Day, Scott Donaldson. Scott pulled out. He's got these tremors in his leg, which has been going back a little while now, which is really sad because he'd got as far as Judgment Day and then that happens and you look at it. Ryan Day though, I mean, he'd hit a 1-4-6 in that match. He only went four frames and then it got pulled because Scott couldn't continue. He's in serious form. He's striking a ball very well, isn't he?
Brilliantly well. Yeah, playing really, really well. You know, won this year, proper player. Looks to be in serious form and will be, he's a contender.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely no question about it. Just a word on Scott. I mean, I've played through injury, played with injuries. I really, really feel for him. You know, real nice guy. A lot of time for Scott. Feels so. Scott, you know, if you are listening, just hope it fixes, mate. I hope you get it fixed and get back to playing because, you know, really, really feel for you. To get to Judgment Day, the last match, and to be beaten by something outside of your control is really poor. So listen, mate, if you're out there listening, I hope everything works out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I echo that completely as well. Yeah, Ryan Day, big threat at the Crucible. Pang Jung-shu beat Zhu Se 10-5. Pang backing up his ranking event final earlier in the season. With that, he's playing very well. Jimmy Robertson, great to see Jimmy do well. Nice guy, Jimmy Robertson. Beat Anthony Hamilton 10-2, though. I mean, that's a heavy defeat for Anthony.
Yeah, I mean, no one beats Hamilton by that score, do they? I mean, you know, he's such a wily character, knows every shot in the book. I thought that match would be a lot closer. Because I'm not sure if they're practice partners or I'm not sure that might be wrong, but I thought they would know each other's games well enough for that to go close. So I didn't see that scoreline coming. But Jimmy's the type of player if he gets a head of steam up, he's very hard to stop.
Oh yeah,
he's a proper scorer when he gets going, and he obviously got his scoring boots on and just went through Anthony.
Yeah, he's a bit hot and cold, isn't he? But when he's hot, he's hot. Elliot Slessor beat Zhou Yulong 10-5. That's a big win for Elliot, working with Peter Ebdon as well.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, you're starting to see some of the green shoots of that working coming together, because it's for Elliot, it's never been a case of the shots or technically. I think it's always been his composure and between the ears. That's what's made the difference with him. And, you know, there'd be very few players in the history of the game who were better on the mental side than Peter Ebdon. So maybe that's the difference. Maybe that's what we're starting to see coming through, because he's very gifted, Elliot. Yeah, don't worry about that. If he gets his head in the right place, he could beat anyone.
So who's Ebdon working with now then? Lizowski? Jack Lizowski, he's working with Elliot Slessor.
I think with Peter and Chris Henry to a point, it's simpler to list the players he's not working with.
but does he give the kind of success that the 147 podcast does?
That's for people to decide, isn't it?
I don't think he does he? Hussein Vafai beat Jackson Page 10-6. Big win for Hussein, that. Great to see him at the Crucible.
Yeah, brilliant. You know, obviously been through loads away from the table. Not the easiest of journeys, as he's alluded to. You know, to be a snooker player coming from where he does. Obviously lots going on that we won't cover. But great story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure he'll give as good as he gets.
David Grace listener of the podcast, really chuffed for David. He's been to the Crucible before, beat Andrew Higginson 10-5. And again, he's another player that's playing very well, is David, isn't he?
Playing really well. You don't qualify through any system and get to the World Championships if you're not, you know, at the top of your game. It just doesn't happen. And so, yeah, he's going to be a threat. Obviously, local guy from Leeds, not that far away here in Sheffield. You know, Yorkshire lad will have a lot of support when he walks out and plays. Absolute lover of the sport. Oh. You know, we talk about players. It's a tag we give away too easily, I think, to players. We say, oh, he's a lovely player and he loves the sport, this, that and the other. David Grace would be right at the top of that list.
Oh, he lives in the club.
Well, he does so much for the game that goes completely unspoken and noticed about. You know, he runs the pro-am scene in the Northern Snooker Centre in Leeds. He's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes on the amateur game. He gets involved in things that, you know, he doesn't have to, for no reward. Real nice guy. Someone I'd love to see do really, really well. And who knows? This could be his week.
I think I actually saw him put on Facebook earlier today. He's got a pro-am this Saturday. Phenomenal.
He could be getting a letter from World Snooker, you know, because I'm not sure you're allowed to have an event conflicting with another event within a certain distance. Could be getting a letter, Dave.
Quite possibly. The next one's heartbreak. And you know which one I'm talking about. Joe Perry, 10. Mark Davis, 9.
Sick.
Chuff for Joe.
Yeah, absolutely.
First of all, really chuff for Joe.
Yeah.
His nickname's a gentleman. He is a gentleman. He's a very, very nice guy. But Mark Davis, tour pro for a long time. I emceed him in his ranking final, the English Open, when he played Bingham down in Crawley. Really sad to see him lose his tour card.
I don't know anyone with a bad word to say about Mark Davis. You know, Robbie and I were travelling over from Dublin last night. President Biden had landed in Dublin, caused absolute travel chaos at Dublin Airport. By the time we got through Dublin Airport, we got to Manchester, got the bags, got to the hotel, ran out of the hotel to make our dinner reservations in Manchester. We sat down at the table, turned the phone on, put YouTube on, straight to Judgment Day at 9:00.
Oh.
And we sat there in the restaurant like the rest of the snooker family and watched the deciding frame. And as Mark was building the break to come back to steal the frame and retain his tour card, he just seemed to be going about it so serenely.
Yeah.
It just was guaranteed to clear up as far as I was concerned. The brown to blue went wrong. He finished wrong side of the blue, further from the... I still thought he was going to pop the pin.
Yeah, so did I. I'm sat in a hotel room, exactly the same. I'm like, oh, he'll still get it. It's a long one, but he'll still pop that.
Missed it. Then it rattles and goes along the black cushion to what we call the number one pocket.
Looks like it's going in.
It has to. How's it not gone in? Oh. Along the cushion? Because it's slightly against the nap there, and you can see it's on the cushion, and it just drifts away at the last foot. That's the nap going against the nap. And leaves Joe the pink. Now, Joe still needs the pink and the black.
Yeah, yeah.
The pink wasn't great, but the black was very, very good. But you could see the emotion in Joe after, you know, when he was chatting to Rob Walker.
He was so conflicted, wasn't
so
he?
So conflicted. I think they're very good mates.
Yeah.
And I suppose, really, I think we have to give them both a big credit there because... That whole emotional side of it, they're good mates. Joe would have known Mark's position, Mark's playing for his life, this, that and the other. They both gave as good as they got. A real professional performance. And, you know, I have a sneaky feeling that Mark, he'll go to Q School, I think. If I had to bet, I think I'd say, yeah, he'll go to Q School and he'll be back.
I really hope that's the case.
I don't think we've seen the last of Mark Davis.
I really hope that's the case. He's far, far too good not to. So there you go. So Joe Perry through to the Crucible. David Gilbert beat Matthew Stevens 10-7. Good win there for the farmer.
Great win. Matthew Stevens starting to look, you know, like he was returning to form. You know, twice a finalist, obviously, at the Crucible. Great, great player. Been a real one of the mainstays of the tour, you know, for the last 30 years. I remember when I first joined the junior circuit as a 10-year-old, Matthew was those, you know, few years ahead of me. And he was the one everyone was like, he's going to be special. And he has been special. He's had a great career.
Yeah, yeah.
A great career. And when you watch Matthew in full stroke, he's still got it. Like,
oh, yeah.
You watch him, he's still got all of those little things that make you one of the best players. Thought that was a tough match to call. The angry farmer getting the job done in the end. And there was a break. I actually saw, in amongst our travel chaos, actually did see what turned out to be the last frame of that match. And the break he made to win was brilliant, because it could have gone wrong four or five times.
He just kept pulling it round.
Just kept putting balls.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Amazing. Anthony McGill beat Cao Yupeng 10-6. And it is Cao, not Cao or Chow. Or Nopon Senkam beat Zhang Ander 10-9. What a game that was.
Unbelievable.
What a game. The emotion on Nopon at the end was incredible.
The shot on the black to win, you know, you watch that sequence of fight on the black, was just incredible. Zhang played a safety shot trying to put the black off the side cushion and onto the balk cushion. Caught the black much too thin. Left a very missable, wasn't a gimme at all. And Nopon, true to form, stood there and knocked it in as if it was over the pocket. Didn't touch the side.
Oh, it was amazing. What a shot that is. With everything that was on it, what a shot that was.
Fancy that one, I can tell you.
Absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal. Massive win for Matt Selt over Graham Dott. Graham Dott, of course, former world champion. Crucible legend, Graham Dott, really. Matt Selt beats him 10-6 and qualifies for Sheffield.
Yeah, brilliant. And, you know, Matt's a very good friend of mine, as we know. You know, I was thrilled for him. Very fond of Graham as well. He seems to come alive for the World Championships. Great record. Obviously a past champion. I think that gets forgotten a little bit about. I think he's kind of the forgotten champion, really, in the modern era. Been to two other finals here as well. Yeah. A serious player when the World Championships kicks off, and just fell at the last.
Ricky Walden beat Tep Chai Anu, another deciding frame, 10-9. Great win for Ricky.
Didn't take long, that match. About 2 hours.
No, it really didn't. No match with Tep Chai ever does. Si Jie Hui, your mate, beat your other mate, Jordan Brown, 10-7. We're going to come on to the draw in a minute, but you were travelling back from, you've been holding Dubai, you were travelling back, and I was watching that game, and I messaged you, and I've shared this message since, and I was watching that game and it suddenly struck me, and I messaged you and I said, look, it's just struck me, if Si Jie Hui beats Geordie, it's absolutely nailed on you're going to get him in the first round at the Crucible.
Nailed on.
I think that was what you responded, wasn't it?
I don't think there was anything else in the message, it was guaranteed, absolute racing certainty.
We'll come on to the draw in a minute, we'll see what happened in that, shall we? Wu Yizhe, massive win for Wu Yizhe over Chris Wakelin, listener to the podcast. It would have been nice to see Chris there, but Wu Yizhe's a talent, isn't he?
Well, I mean, I don't think Chris did a great deal wrong. He was 7-4 up in that match.
He was.
Not lost a Judgment Day match, not, you know, played at the Crucible before. I thought he was going to come through. I'm sure he did. Certainly at 7-4. And as I say, I don't think Chris did much wrong. Wu Yizhe seemed to find a gear and ran out the winner. And that's the problem with snooker. As we've been saying since, you know, the game was made, almost, like, when your opponent's at the there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like other sports. You don't get your turn in a minute. You don't get your next three darts. You don't hit the ball in golf and go and find it and hit it again. In tennis, they hit the ball back to you. It's not like that. There's nothing you can do. And I feel for Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. Fan Zhengji beat Stephen Maguire 10-6. Fan Zhengji, of course, former European Masters champion. Pity that for Stephen. He was looking like he was playing some good stuff, actually, throughout the game. I did see him punch the table at one point, and he gave that tape. When he punches a table, the table stays punched, doesn't it?
Oh, you wouldn't want a right-hander off him.
No.
I'll tell you that.
He gave the slate one. And finally, Jack Jones beat Barry Hawkins 10-8. I didn't see that one coming, but Jack is one of those players that when he's on his game, he's a fine player.
Again, you know, one of the players who, you know, perhaps hasn't fulfilled the potential. Maybe this is his week. You know, everyone has their week, don't they? And listen, you know, someone like Barry Hawkins, a seasoned Crucible campaigner with one of the best records at the Crucible in recent memory, I think you just kind of potentially thought he would breeze through qualifying and would definitely be here. A bit like Maguire. You know, I just thought Maguire would qualify. You know, perhaps shouldn't is a wrong word to use, but shouldn't be in the qualify. You feel like he deserves to be in the 16, but the rankings don't tell lies. And I just thought he'd get through. Thought both of them would win. Surprising.
you need to talk me through this. How exactly does that work?
What do you mean?
How could both of them win?
Well, they weren't playing each other.
Oh, sorry. You confused me then.
Oh.
You confused me then.
I suppose it does help if you listen.
It does. Sorry about that. That was Judgment Day.
What?
And what a Judgment Day it was. it really was phenomenal. It was fantastic. It really was. So, you were there this morning at Five Live in Manchester for the draw with Rick Edwards and...
Ellie Aldroyd.
And Ellie Aldroyd, of course. All you said, from what I heard, was you didn't want Matt Selt. Which is fair comment, really. You didn't want Matt Selt. I'd already told you who you were drawing in the first round. And lo and behold, what happened?
Lo and behold, out he came.
Out pops CJ Hui from the bag of balls. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, do you know, I'm feeling very good about it. And I don't mean this in a disparaging way at all. But I think there could have been a lot worse draws pulled out of that bag. I do think the 16 qualifiers represent the 16 strongest qualifiers we've ever seen.
Do you know, it's funny, watching Judgment Day, what was in my head all the time was, goodness me, those players that play at the Crucible really thoroughly deserve their place there.
I think if you look down the list, you see players' names like Anthony McGill, Jimmy Robertson, Ricky Walden, and others. You know, there'll be lots of others I've forgotten about. They represent serious banana skins for the 16 seeds. So to get one of the debutants was about as good as I could hope for. Now, obviously, there's the backstory with CJ Hui, which ironically has nothing to do with him.
If anyone hasn't... No, I'm not going to go
there. This is one of those things that happens, isn't it? You know, and I was talking to one of the journalists this morning, is that, you know, years and years ago, a story that happened 18 months ago between CJ Hui and High, when I came off the match where I'd lost, I went on a rant, said he shouldn't be in the building, that type of thing would have been tomorrow's chip paper.
Yeah.
In the world we live in now, that's not the case. And despite repeated, walkaways, turn downs, whatever you want to call it, apologies, you know, rephrasing it, didn't mean that, meant something else, I've learned my mistakes, I shouldn't have said it. Despite all those things, I still get tweeted about it every single day. And today's been no different.
So the first round of the Crucible, Sean has drawn CJ Hui, a player that he hates. Let's... No, he doesn't. He really doesn't. He just
despises
him. No. Not at all. So let's look at the draw then in full. Ronnie O'Sullivan, defending champion, draws Pang Zhengxu. Now, Pang is a player in form. He's just come through qualifying. He reached the final of the Classic the other week. He's playing very, very well.
Yep.
We've not seen that much of Ronnie because he wasn't in Hull. You know, he's been a little bit AWOL. So that's an interesting match, that.
It is interesting. For me, that match is all about Pang because as a debutant and up against the defending champion.
Yes.
Like, there is no deeper baptism of fire for the young player. He will either sink or swim. And even if he swims, even if he has the best day of his life, he takes to it like a duck to water. He enjoys being out. Even if he does all those things, Ronnie finds a gear and bursts into this.
He's still playing Ronnie O'Sullivan.
He's still got to beat Ronnie O'Sullivan, which, as we know, is very, very difficult. I think, and I don't mean this with respect, I think that's probably one of the better draws that Ronnie could have got.
Yeah, quite possibly.
And I expect Ronnie to win that fairly easily.
Where's Ronnie's game? We'll find out. That kicks things off on Saturday. Ding Junhui against Hossein Vafai. That's an intriguing one.
I make Hossein favourite for that game. I don't. Will he win? Or who knows?
I think had Ding not done so well in Hull, reaching the semi-finals in Hull, I would.
I don't think Ding likes the World Championship.
Tend to agree with you. No, possibly not.
I remember the season years ago. Ding won 5 ranking events. He lost in the Crucibles, but whatever round he lost in, and the media back home in China said he'd had a terrible season.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's still playing under that pressure of trying to win the world title. I don't think he likes it here, and I think Hossein will win.
We shall see. Luca Brissell, the Belgian Bullet, against Ricky Walden. Now, Luca Brissell, am I right? He's never won a game at the Crucible, has he? He played there like 5 times.
Never won a game.
Time.
Never won a game.
That's crazy for a player of his talent and ability. I mean, it's mad.
Madness, isn't it?
Absolute madness.
But true.
Just seems crazy. Mark Williams up against Jimmy Robertson. Jimmy Robertson, we've talked about, a player in real form. Willow, another one that was missing at Hull. What do we think?
It's difficult to call, isn't it? Because those players, those household names who weren't in the last few events, we don't know where their game's at. I just think the Crucible, you can throw the form book out the window.
Yeah, yeah,
because you're players who've won it, who know how to handle it, and there is a massive aspect of hit that here, opposed to everywhere else.
Mark strolls in there, doesn't he?
He strolls in.
He strolls into the Crucible, whereas other players, we've mentioned Pang, he's debutant there, they're going to come in nervous and tight as hell, whereas Willow strolls in. I have heard, though, if Mark Williams goes up first round, that Mark Allen's healthy eating, your gastric sleeve, the takeaway economy in Sheffield is worried.
Collapsing, as
if
we
Willow
speak.
If Willow goes out early, it's in big
collapsing.
Trouble.
Collapsing. The takeaway street of Sheffield, whatever it's called, has been on. They're begging him to win.
Judd Trump gets, for me, probably the draw of death in Anthony McGill. Now, Anthony McGill, he's proven himself at the Crucible. He's come through the qualifiers, and Judd's got him. Judd, pretty lightly raced. We don't know what he's been doing in practice. Pretty lightly raced against a very, very informed Anthony McGill.
Yeah, I think an Anthony McGill with, you know, a few best of 19s under his belt, very, very sharp,
yes.
Had a good season, plays very well here.
Yep.
Former semi-finalist, had more than one foot in the final that year.
Oh, he had both feet in the final, and he somehow fell out of it.
You know, managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. You know, it was incredible, that match. Brings out his best form here. Was the one you wanted to avoid out of all 16 qualifiers, without question. Couldn't be a tougher first round for Judd Trump. Very, very interesting to see what happens there.
I'll tell you now, if Judd comes through that, he will be fearsome in this, because that is a hell of a match to start.
Anthony
with.
Will test every aspect of Judd's game and character in that
100%.
Match.
100%. Next up, Jack Lizowski against Nopon Senkam. Nopon looked delighted to be there. Jack, again, we've not really seen that much of him. Where's his game at? He's been improving. He's been getting better with Peter Ebden's coaching as well behind him. I think that game will tell us a lot.
I think that'll be very close. I think they're both very similar players.
I think it could be, yeah.
They're both very similar. They both play, have moments of absolute sheer brilliance, and then throw in a miss that, frankly, you wouldn't miss. So that match could go all the way 10-9 on the black.
Yep. Next up, two of the nicest players on the tour. Rob Milkins, I mean, you didn't think so in Wales a few weeks ago, did you?
Hang on a minute.
Against Joe Perry. So the Milkman against the Gentleman. That's a good game, that.
One for the ages, isn't it?
And yeah.
Did I see a stat somewhere, a dark stat on Twitter this morning from Neil Foles? He loves his dark
stats.
He does
love his dark stats.
Now, I've actually got over there, over the other side of the room here, a Crucible almanac.
Yeah, I saw it. He's holding
I've
that table up, isn't it?
I've got it. I'm going to go through that, because I'm obviously here as well in a punditry role for BBC. I will be scouring that book for some dark stats. However, I'm sure Neil tweeted this morning that the Rob Milkins-Joe Perry head-to-heads is the longest-standing head-to-head stat out of all the players left in the World Championships.
Wow.
They've been playing each other before anyone else.
Well, they've got a combined age of 312. I may have exaggerated that ever so slightly. Look, two of the nicest guys on tour. Rob Milkins is in serious form. Joe Perry had to beat Matt Davis to get there. That should be a great game. You against Xi Jinping. Let's leave that one alone for now. Mark Allen against Fang Zhengzhi. Now, Mark had an amazing start to the season. His form has tailed off, it's fair to say. Fan on his day. I mean, he beat Ronnie O'Sullivan, the fan, the European Masters 2 years ago. I make Mark the favourite, but I make that a very live game as well.
Fan beat me to qualify for the German Masters this year. The German Masters is a very emotive event for me with the Brandon Parker connection, Brandon Parker trophy. I gave him hell. I threw everything at him in that qualifier in Leicester. Tried my what's-its off. He beat me, fair and square.
Yep.
He beat Maguire to qualify. He's obviously playing very, very good snooker. I think Mark's got his handful. I think Mark will have to play somewhere near his best and hope that his experience at the group, which isn't astronomical, you know, this is a player who's, I think, only been to the one table setup once at the Crucible. Mark will have to use his experience there and hope that Fang has a bad day, because if Fang gets a head of steam up, he could sail off into the distance.
Well, we'll see which Mark Allen turns up. Stuart Bingham against Dave Gilbert up next.
I mean, that could be a final.
It could be a final of a
ranking event.
That's a proper clash. A proper clash.
That could go either way. Again, you know, Dave, a few years ago, had more than a foot in the final. We lost that epic semi-final to Higgins. Stuart, as we know, you know, been to the semi-finals a couple of times, winner here in 15 against yours truly, knows how to play here. And I can't stress enough how much that means here at the Crucible, above all other venues. He knows how to get the job done, knows how to prep properly for the matches, knows how to do everything. Dave has played here a number of times as well. That match, I think, is the hardest to call of them all. And I predict that going a long, long way to the finish. I think it'll be 10-8, 10-9 either way.
Should be a cracker. Next up, another player with great Crucible experience, Ali Carter. He's woven into the history of this place. Against Jack Jones, one of the surprise packages from Judgment Day. Personal note, great to see Ali in there in the top 16.
Yeah, brilliant.
Qualifying for the Crucible. It really is. And, you know, it's testament to his hard work and everything else that he's there.
Absolutely. I think I've said it before on the podcast. I mean, I'm good friends with Ali Carter. I think he's one of the most misunderstood characters in the game.
100%.
Takes a lot of stick on social media. And listen, you know, haven't we all said things that have upset a few people? I mean, I've said the odd thing. Freely admit it. But yeah, I'm very fond of Ali. Great to see his return to form. Not least, I think, you know, with the work that he's been doing with Chris, you can see the benefits of that. Just trying to, you know, work on his composure, and he's been known to spin out of control a few times. So if he manages that, he's got every shot in the book, and he's a handful for everyone.
Next one's a real barnstormer for me. This could be the tie of the first round in my book. Neil Robertson against Wu Yizhe. Now, people at home haven't heard of Wu Yizhe. He's a sensation, okay? Is he 19 years old?
He's very young. I don't know what he is.
Let's say he's 12, okay? He's 12 years old, Chinese player. Incredible talent. Really incredible talent. About 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, I started hearing about this lad. People started talking, the murmuring started about this lad that's coming through, a bit of a wonder kid, blah, blah. He's qualified for the Crucible. He's there as a debutant. He's playing Neil Robertson. We all know how good Neil can be. We all know the season Neil's had this year. Now, he normally comes into the Crucible amid a real purple patch, a la yourself this season. He normally comes in having done what you've done, pretty much. This season, he isn't. By his own very high standards, he's had a very, very quiet season. And he's playing against this sensation from China who, the way he looked on Judgment Day and throughout the qualifiers, he looked like a real world beater, I'll be honest.
Neil beat me here a few seasons ago in round two, and I said after I came off the match, if he played like that, he wins a tournament. You can call the tournament off.
Yep.
He didn't, and he lost. He's on record as saying he doesn't like playing out there, certainly in the two-table setup. And yep. Am I right to say that since winning it, he's only been to the one-table setup once?
Once, that's right.
I mean, that's a ridiculous stat.
For a player of his ability and talent, that's crazy. I mean, it's mad.
I think it's in his head. I think the size of the venue, he's got a very pronounced walk into the shot. You know, if you look at the technical aspects of the what we call the drill, you know, that sighting mechanism and then getting down, he's a very pronounced, deliberate walk in.
Yep.
It's a tight room, the Crucible, with two tables. Doesn't like it. And I think he said it that often that it is in his brain now.
Yep.
And Wu Yizhe pots him off the lampshades.
Yeah, he does.
Pots them from anywhere. Phenomenal talent. One of the most talented, gifted players I've ever seen. Neil, we've used the phrase a few times, Neil has got his hands more than full in that match. He will need every ounce of his experience, which is significant to tie Wu Yizhe up. Otherwise, Wu Yizhe could run off into the distance with that match and win that 10-3, 10-4.
That is a match not to miss. That is an absolute don't miss, is that match, because that will be a cracker. Next up, Kyron Wilson against Ryan Day. That's a tough old match as well.
What a stinker that is for the first round. What a
horrible first round match.
Stinker that is. I mean, that's like my draw last year where I got Maguire here.
Mm.
Like, that has been the final of it. Maguire and I played in the final in the China Open years and millions of years ago. This match could be a final of any tournament.
Kyron Wilson playing very well. Reached the final last week, as we know. Ryan Day, he had a 147, he had the 16 red total clearance. He's had a 146 in qualifying for this, which is currently the highest break in the tournament. And let's face it, that will take a bit of beating. That's a match of the highest quality, it really is. Next up, John Higgins, the legend, four-time champion of the world, against David Grace, our mate from Leeds. I'm not going to make a prediction on that one because I don't want to. But I hope David settles. I hope he gets in there and settles quickly.
I don't think it's unfair. John's the massive favourite to win that match.
Of course he is.
Of course he is. Four-time champion. Knows the place like, you know, the back of his hand. But listen, Dave is more than capable if he settles and if he gets out there and adapts to the conditions and enjoys himself and plays with freedom, he could win.
Yep.
In 2005, I walked out to play John Higgins, who was my nemesis. Every time I got to my PB in an event, I walked into Higgins and he slapped me aside. When I walked out here in 05 against him in round two, I just assumed he was going to beat me again. He didn't. And obviously we know what went on to happen there. These players can be beat.
Yeah, yeah.
You get on top of them early, they don't like it. And John, to some degree, has been the missing man of the season. Won the Championship League a few weeks ago, so obviously he's playing well.
Yeah, yeah.
But if Dave gets on top of him, everyone, you know, people, they don't like it. They don't like it up him.
Absolutely they don't. Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how that one pans out. Mark Selby against Matt Selt. Selby's in good form. Selby is a lot of people's tip for this. He won the Classic the other week down in Leicester. He's a lot of people's tip for the Worlds. Can Matt upset the apple cart?
Absolutely he can. 100%. However, Matt did say in the press, having qualified, that, you know, for him playing at the Crucible, he's never settled. He just finds it, you know, it does funny things. And it does funny things to everybody.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah.
That's why that experience of walking out there and playing and winning is so vitally important. And I just, if Matt settles, he can win, without question. Probably one of the most underrated sort of tacticians, safety players of the game. When he gets playing and scoring, devastatingly good. Obviously, he's playing four-time champion Mark Selby, who is very good in all areas and will play to a very high level. We know that.
Yeah,
that match could be a very, very interesting encounter, and I'm going to predict it will be 10-8 either way.
Sorry, just not to upset Matt Selt as well. Sorry, Matt. I didn't give you a full introduction. The reigning Indian Open champion, Matthew Selt.
He does like that.
He does like that.
He does like that.
I'm contractually obliged to
play, when we play golf, he writes that on the scorecard.
Seriously?
He loves it.
Brilliant. Now, I've saved the best till last because as sure as night follows day, as sure as you were going to draw Xi Jiahui, that was written in the stars, there was another tie, which is the final first-round tie, that I'm going to read out, which was absolutely guaranteed to happen.
Guaranteed.
Without any doubt whatsoever. That is, of course, the Tyneside Terror, Gary Wilson, up against his best mate, Elliot Slesser. Now, it was completely written in the start. They must have been sat there listening to the draw going, come on. Come on then, out you come.
Good thing or bad thing?
Oh, I don't know. I honestly don't know. It would have been great to see them both with a chance to get through, but in the Northeast, that's an absolutely enormous match.
Imagine the bragging rights.
Oh,
in the club, whoever wins that match. Can you imagine?
Oh, the other one's life's over.
Oh,
it's finished. I mean, they're done.
Goodness me! In that club up there with Paul Rinaldi running, unbelievable banter that's going to go on in that club for whoever wins.
That will be the case in any club where there's two pros as close to each other as that, but Gary and Elliot. Two players that are known for ripping each other, that are known for wind-up. Come on. That is going to be... It'll be a great atmosphere. I'm sure they will play it in the way it should be played, in the spirit of the game.
Blood.
But they'll be trying to murder
each
other. Yeah, they will, yeah. And then they'll go
for... Exactly as it should be.
Then they'll go for a beer afterwards.
Then they'll go for a beer.
Yeah, that... I'm not even going to call that because Elliot played so well in qualifying. Gary is a quality player, won the Scottish Open this year and then did the best Scottish accent I've ever heard when I interviewed him.
That genuinely could go all the way because they play each other so often. Yeah. They're practice partners. They know each other's game inside and out. Now, obviously, Gary's got a bit more pedigree here, having been to the semis a few seasons ago. That genuinely could go all the way, that.
Yeah, it could.
They could have to be separated. I don't know if they... Can you win a match on alphabetical order? I don't know. They could not be separated at the end. It could be on points.
It could be on... Yeah. I don't know. Do you know
that
what?
Could get to 9 each. All the balls could go in. The points could be level. They might have to have a fight in the back.
Just shake hands and walk off.
Just have a wrestling match out the back. Arm wrestle for it. Who's got the best grip?
Who? Go on then. Who'd win? Gary Wilson or Elliot Slessor in the arm wrestle?
I think Slessor would win that.
Do you really?
I think Slessor would win the arm wrestle.
Gary Wilson's been a taxi driver, for God's sake.
Yeah, no, I know that.
He can look after himself.
Yeah, no, I get that. I do get that.
A taxi driver in Newcastle?
I think, yeah, no. Well, you're making a very good case. The more I'm listening, yeah, no. I think Slessor's got that. I think he could lose it. I think he's got that fuse, if the fuse goes missing.
Oh, you think it could just go?
Yeah, I think he's if the red mist comes down, I think he's a snapper.
Oh, okay.
Snapper Slessor.
He listens to the podcast. We don't need to be careful. Elliot, good luck. And Gary, good luck. That should be an absolute cracker. That first round's brilliant.
That's just the first
round,
by the way. That's the first round.
It all starts this Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. It is, you know what? This is the wonderful thing with TV coverage nowadays. You can watch every single ball. It's all live on Discovery Plus. It's all live on the BBC. And don't come at me with this whole, oh, it's not on BBC Two all day. No, it's not. It's on the red button. You've all got it. Use the red button, okay? Watch it on the red button. Press the red button. It brings it up. There you go. Watch the snooker. It's all on there live. There's no waiting until next Thursday for the paper to find out the result. You can watch every... You can watch
Hang on, was
every...
That, was that a carrier pigeon just flew past the window then?
So something's really wound me up. You can watch every single ball that is struck in this World Championship, and not just on one broadcaster, it's on two. You can watch it on the BBC, on the red button if it's not on BBC 4 or 2 or 1 or 3 or 12. And it's also on Discovery Plus and Eurosport as well. Again, Discovery Plus, you can watch every single ball struck. The coverage is going to be immense. There's Hazel on the BBC and, of course, Sean. And you're going to be commentating every morning when you're playing in the afternoon, yeah?
I've actually requested... if I can do some commentary during my match.
During your match?
Yeah. You know, just to annoy everybody.
Yeah, just to wear a waistcoat mic.
Yeah, I've mentioned it to them. Yeah. Happy to wear a GoPro, stick the mic on. I will do mid-match, mid-break commentating analysis with the iPad.
Do you know what? That would be great with if the other player's on a break and you're just sat in your chair going, no. It's a tough shot. Oh, he's looking at that one. He's going the wrong way.
Wouldn't have gone that way.
He's going the wrong way around this shot.
No.
He's going to let Murphy in.
In the third person. No, I am here. I am here in dual mode. I am here working. We're commentating. I'll be in the studio. I will be there doing the analysis, doing some of the highlights. In and around my match play. I'm hoping that I'll be here come the final weekend and involved in the one table setup. Maybe the fire. I'm hoping I'll be here with Mikey. But I will be here for the duration, come what may.
Fantastic.
And I wouldn't have it any other way.
We'll be all over social media on it anyway. I'm not going to be here in Sheffield. I'm going to be all over the country doing different things, but I'll be watching on TV the same as everyone else will on Discovery Plus or on the BBC Red Button where you can watch every single ball struck. But interact with us on social media at 147pod. Let us know your thoughts as the tournament progresses. We'll try and get a podcast during the tournament. I think that'd be great if we can
do that at some point.
If we can do it here in Sheffield, we will. If we do it remotely, we'll do it remotely. If you've got any questions about the World Championships, about Sheffield, the Crucible, get them into us on social media at 147pod. We'll answer as many as we can in that podcast. I am well aware we have overrun today. It's an hour and 15 minutes. There's been a lot to cover. It's all been snooker. There's been no nonsense. There's been no rant. It's the snooker podcast. It's not a snooker podcast. It now suddenly is a bloody snooker podcast. However...
an hour and 15 is nothing compared to Phil and Nick over at Talking Snooker.
Hello!
Nothing.
Nothing compared to Phil and Nick.
They haven't done the intro by this
stage. No, they haven't, to be fair. We are still going to do our pointless question.
Brilliant.
Because we have to do the pointless question. It's sort of law, okay? But get the questions in on social media, at 147pod. Anything you want to know about the Crucible, the World Championships, anything whatsoever, message us on there or send it through on our feed. We'll answer as many as we can when we do our mid-tournament podcast. But your pointless question, Sean Murphy.
And you.
And me. Yeah, and me. It's going to be a lot smaller than it was before your operation, but what is your death row final meal? You're allowed one more meal before you go to the gallows or you get shot.
Is this a meal or three courses?
Well, I mean, I call a meal three courses at least.
I can't do three courses anymore.
Okay.
Well, unless I'm playing golf.
I was going to say...
And then I hit the wrong course by accident.
It's not that many holes.
No.
Death row meal.
I mean, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that we haven't spoken about this before. All reasonable people agree. All civilized people agree.
Go on.
That Italian is the best food on the planet. I think we can, we've accepted that.
No. Carry on.
Right. You've thrown me there. My opinion, all civilized people in the world agree that Italian food is bar none, top of the tree. So I'm going for Italian. Although I'm not massively experimental, my favourite dish is carbonara.
Oh, God.
Don't mind if it's spaghetti or penne. I do make at least the second best carbonara I've ever tasted.
Well, big shout.
I'm also very modest.
Never made me one. Saved your career, but you never made me one, you know. Yeah.
it's in the post along with your check.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, carbonara right. By post, that would be quite a thing.
Listen, if I knew your address, you'd have already had it. What's your last meal? I mean, the question we're going to follow up here is, how have we ended up on death row? That's the second question.
No, there's various reasons for that. But generally, your comments about amateurs.
I'll tell you what, the amount of stick I got for that, it was as if I'd done something to warrant being on death row. I got abused. I'll quickly tell this story. I got abused on the M1 in traffic 2 days after it happened.
Sorry about that.
Thug mentality. Crawling in traffic, a white van man pulled his window down and waved at me. Now, that happens in traffic every now and again. And I thought, oh, this is nice. I wound the window down and he went, "You're an absolute disgrace, Murphy. You should be ashamed." And he hurled abuse at me across the carriageway. I was like, anyway, just wind the window up and moonwalk out of there.
Wow.
Right.
So you hate amateurs. We've covered this. Okay, so you're going very, very bland spaghetti carbonara.
Bland?
Oh, God, yeah, seriously, bland.
There's a Yorkshire pudding on your dish, I'm throwing you out of that window.
Well, it might have been the starter. I mean, Danny Willetts had Yorkshire pudding starter at the big dinner. Do you remember that?
Get away with yourself. Have a day off.
The main course has got to be venison in a red wine jus.
You've upset so many people.
In a red wine jus with a potato gratin on the side.
Oh. Oh. Yeah, to be fair, that sounds phenomenal.
It knocks your carbonara out the window over the Winter Gardens and it's somewhere near Rotherham.
We won't talk about Rotherham.
Let's not talk about Rotherham.
It's a dark phase of my life.
It really is. Right. The podcast has been longer than normal. There's good reason for that.
Before we leave, you've one last chance to explain what the free ticket was for.
No.
Wow. I'll
tell you afterwards.
Goodbye.
Sean, good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck at the Crucible. We'll talk before then, I'm sure. But we will try and get a mid-tournament podcast in if we can. I think it would be great to be able to do that, especially if we can do it here in Sheffield. Good luck for the tournament.
Thank you.
Good luck with the commentary. Get practicing and do us all proud you have done all season. At 147pod is where you will find us across all forms of social media. Interact with us on there. We will interact back with you as best we can. But for now, enjoy the World Championships at the Crucible. I'm certainly going to enjoy watching it. You're going to enjoy playing it, Sean.
Can't wait.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening.
That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.